Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. And there is a world on the brink of war today. Our nation is suffering from some of the highest prices for food and fuel that we have seen in 10, 20, 30, 40 years. There's a lot going on shaking us to our core. It's a lot we need to talk about. We're going to get into a little bit about what's going on in Ukraine. Now, we hear this all over the place, but I think we need to pick out some specific areas of what's going on in Ukraine to talk about to help us define the problem or the situation a little closer, and we'll get into that a little bit. We have a woman who is sitting to become a United States Supreme Court Justice. Seems like a pretty decent person. Her answers are evasive, as they all are now. Anyone that goes up to the Supreme Court, we're not looking for the best justice. We're looking for the person who's going to follow our point of view. And one side of the aisle wants to ask spitball questions that are real easy to answer so that they can get the person through. And the other side wants to attack because they believe their beliefs, the person who wants to be a Supreme Court justice, their beliefs are different than the other side of the aisle. So what we get is instead of getting an honest vetting of somebody, we play a game. We play a game for as long as we can. Political correctness is a huge part of it. You know, who can you ask certain questions to? Who's allowed to ask certain questions of the candidates? And we kind of take away from the fact that, you know, in our modern world today, every candidate for these positions should be able to be asked any question by any questioner. But we have to always, hurt the people who are asking questions by, they're racist, they're haters, they're this, they're that, the other thing. That's why they're asking these questions. They're communists. That's why they're asking this question. Whatever it is. It's unfortunate because we don't get a real answer out of people. So I didn't want to start with that, but I guess that's somewhere we can start. And I want to pronounce her name correctly. Ketanji Brown. She's currently a judge. I got to tell you, she presents herself very well. I think she seems like a very nice person. Seems very intelligent. I don't think she's going to upset the court in any way. She's really just taking the place of Stephen Breyer, who was a liberal, and she'll be another liberal on the court. So it keeps the balance the way it is. We were a little concerned there with Justice Thomas being in the hospital. You know, ooh, was it COVID? Was it something else? Ooh, and if he has to leave the bench, then Joe Biden gets to appoint another Supreme Court justice. And then, you know, then we go from 6-3 to 5-4 again, which with John Roberts as the swing vote could go either way, which he normally disappoints those on the right. And he surprises those on the left because he is a back and forth kind of guy. He's one of the people who, I believe he said, there is no liberal justice, there's no conservative justices, but we all know that of course there are. You know, the Republicans are going to appoint people that are either rhino-like Republicans or real conservatives, and the Democrats are going to appoint the most radical left-wing candidate that they can possibly squeeze through. So we don't get moderate from either side. You know, how we decide things at our homes. You know, do we sit there no matter what side of the aisle we are on personally, we don't sit there and rabidly hold one position or another. We kind of think it through, don't we? Here's a problem that our family's having. Here's a situation we have to deal with. And how are we going to deal with it? And, you know, sometimes you are more progressive in your responses and sometimes you're more conservative. And I guess that would be the best of all worlds. But this woman who's up there giving her testimony, I think the big push against her was that, you know, she gave child molesters lighter sentences than she could have. Now, what does that mean? You know, when we hear that, what do we say? Oh, she must be in favor of child molesters. Really? Is that what people really think? She's in favor of child molesters? It can only mean a couple of things. One, she maybe doesn't agree that that's such a heavy sentence for someone who did something like that. is warranted. Maybe she feels that they could be rehabilitated. Maybe she feels that the laws are too constrictive in that. Who knows? But I don't think it's because she likes child molesters. I don't think that's it at all. And I don't appreciate somebody saying something like that. Just don't, like, I don't appreciate what people said about Kavanaugh and all of the other conservative justices that are up there. I do find it funny to watch our senator class as they knock themselves out trying to ask hard questions. We're going to ask the hard questions. And then they don't ask the hard questions because they can't. You know, this is where political correctness jumps in. Because she's an African-American female, they have to be very careful what they ask her. They have to be careful of the tone of their voice. They have to make sure they're not mansplaining at her. All of these crazy types of thoughts, as opposed to just she is a professional. She's a highly educated woman. She's an American, and she's been put up for this position on the Supreme Court. Let's just vet her out. Let's ask her the questions. Let's just treat her like we treat everybody else, right? Wouldn't that be relaxing and comforting in our modern world, that we stop worrying about the color of somebody's skin or what genitalia they have, and let's just talk. Let's just ask her questions that are of concern of how her judicial temperament might be. And like I said, she seems like a pretty decent woman. Her answers, I think, are good, except for the fact that she dances around like they all do. Every candidate now has to pretty much dance around their answers because you can't really be honest. You can't give your real opinion because you'll be attacked for it. So we all see that obviously she is a more progressive. She's to the left. She's pro-abortion. She's going to go out of her way to vote with the Biden administration, because that's her political philosophy. Now, she can't admit that, but it's obvious. Just like we knew that, the appointees that President Trump put up were also more conservative, and they were going to vote in a more conservative way. We knew that. Everybody knew that. But it's interesting that how they were attacked, how Kavanaugh was attacked, and how Judge Brown is not being attacked. Matter of fact, it's all kid gloves. Everyone is, because nobody wants to be the one who attacked a woman, and God forbid, attacked a black woman. You know, that would be, you couldn't survive your next election. So therefore, it doesn't matter what the country needs. We're not really going to vet her. We're just going to ask enough so that it looks like we were tough on her. And like I said, I think she'll be fine. We know where she's going to vote. She's going to vote the liberal line every time, just like we know, Kavanaugh is going to be more towards the conservative line. Not always, though. You know, see, that's the thing. Conservatives will occasionally vote with the progressives, but it's almost never that we see the progressives vote with the conservatives. Isn't that funny? It's funny how that works. You know, I guess because conservative justices, when they're put up, they are really attacked. You know, Judge Bork had to back down. They couldn't get him through. A couple others historically, I remember, that couldn't get through. So it does it do us justice? Does it help our country that we have to watch what we say? You know, who can ask the questions? Only Marsha Blackburn can ask the questions of Judge Brown because, well, they're both women. And while there are two different races, a woman can ask another woman questions that a man can't, because then it looks like the man is mansplaining at her or talking down to her. We put such restrictions on ourselves. Aren't we all just adult professionals? Obviously, she's a qualified candidate. She's already on the bench. She's already a judge. She's highly educated. She's obviously very intelligent, and she acquits herself very well. She's a liberal. We know that. You know, there's no way around it. And I'm going to say right now, you're going to see probably, I would say 86 to 14 in favor of her, but it could be as high as 98 to 2 for her. Because I can't imagine, there's no real reason to reject her. There's just not. She just happens to be a liberal, and when you're the president, you get to pick. And as long as the person you're picking is not a crazy person, that's really demonstrated that they are unhinged, then that's who you get. That's how it goes. When you have a conservative president, they get to pick conservative justices. That's, elections have consequences. Right? So I think she's a fine person. Looks like she's She's probably been a very good judge. I don't know her whole record. I just find the goings-on around this process to be less than good for the country. You know, nothing to do with her. Like I said, I think she's fine. She'll be a liberal. She's going to vote the liberal way, no matter what she says. They're trying to back her into corners to get her to say something. Aha! They're still going to vote for her. Stop. You know, I did find it interesting, though. We find ourselves in a world here where, you know, words have multiple meanings now, multiple understandings of who we are as people. Are we virtue signaling? Are we showing that we get it? Are we woke enough? Are we not woke? Or, you know, if you're not woke, are you a hater? All of these kind of crazy things that prevent us from really dealing with the problems we have. I mean, I heard a report that, 54 million American workers, people who have jobs in America, 54 million of them make less than $15 an hour. Well, $15 an hour is about $30,000 a year when you figure it out. Because we work about 2,200 hours a year. That's a standard 40-hour work week kind of thing. If you work 2,000 hours, $15 an hour, that's $30,000. You know how hard it is to live on $30,000 on either coast or down in Florida or any of these places? It is very difficult. When gasoline doubles in price, when food prices double, people can't afford that. People making that kind of money cannot afford to live. And we're not talking about that problem. We're not dealing with that problem. Instead, we worry about the words here. So getting back to Justice, and I want to say her name correctly. I think it's a cool name. Ketanji Brown. Senator Blackburn asked her, can you define the word woman? What is a woman? And she said, no, I can't. Now, listen, this has become such a controversial thing in our country. You know, what is a man? What is a woman? And to me, I look at it this way. If we have people in our transgender community and they don't feel comfortable in the gender that they are and they want to be something else, leave them alone. Let them be who they want to be. What do we care? You know, does anybody tell me what I should do? No. So we shouldn't be telling people how they should feel. Just leave people alone and let them do it. The hard part is when we go changing the actual words, the meanings of words, and things like that. So asking this woman who wants to be a Supreme Court justice, can you define what it means to be a woman? She says, no, I can't. Well, of course she can. She's refusing to because it puts her in the controversy of, are you against the LGBTQ community? Oh, how come you said a woman is a certain thing and therefore a man can't be a woman? You know, oh, you must be a hater. You know, so we have all these roadblocks to conversation. When can't we just treat everybody as a person, treat everybody with respect? So if there's a man who feels like he's a woman and wants to be a woman, who cares? It doesn't affect me. Let him do it. If there's a woman who feels she's a man, let her be a man. What difference does it make? If that helps them to get through their lives, good for them. And I got to tell you, a lot of people in those communities have got to be in great pain, right? We have to have a little empathy, I think, for that also. You can agree with them and not agree with them, that what their life, it's their life choice, not your life choice, it's their life choice. But I look at it, I say, they must be in great pain every day, trying to figure out who they are, where they are, and how do they fit in. So I try to have empathy for people. You know, I have struggles, you have struggles, we all do. And it would be easier if we could have honest conversations about these things, but we can't, right? Because immediately you're going to be called a name, you're going to be they're going to try and cancel you and get rid of you because you have to follow the orthodoxy. And that is, and again, just like why we can't really question Judge Brown is why we can't have any conversations about anything else in our country. It's kind of sad that we're in that kind of a direction. So I wish everybody there on the hearings good luck. I hope we get a good Supreme Court justice that will serve the Constitution very well, because the Constitution is for all of us, no matter who you are, your socioeconomic group, your sex, your gender identification, the color of your skin. It doesn't matter. The Constitution there is for all of us. And if we would just adhere to the Constitution, we would all be better off as a free people. So good luck. to whoever gets on the bench. I hope she serves well, because I'm sure she'll be put on the bench. I'd be interested to see the number. I think 86-14, but it could be as high as 98-2, because, like I said, it's a political correct kind of a thing, and people are not going to go against Judge Brown, and there's really no reason to go against her. You know, we know who she is. She's a liberal, but she's obviously qualified, and therefore, Joe Biden gets to pick who he wants on the court. That's the elections have consequences, right? So we got to pay attention to that. When I turn to our other topics, you know, I just had a birthday celebration. Now, it's not my birthday yet. My birthday is still down the road a couple of weeks. But my wife, Miss Kathleen, threw me a fantastic surprise party. She really did, and she got me good. She really surprised me. I'm not a birthday kind of guy. It's not, to me, birthdays are not that big of a day. It's, you know, it's a day on a calendar, and it's my birthday. Oh, it's my birthday, you know. For Miss Kathleen, it is. She's very big proponent of people's birthdays. She goes out of her way for all our kids, for her parents, for my mom when she was here, to make a big deal out of their birthday, you know, to celebrate the person. You know, it's really a wonderful thing. And as we were coming up on Lieutenant Joe's 60th, holy moly, how the heck did I get here at 60? She was asking a couple weeks ago, she says, listen, it's going to be your 60th birthday. What do you want to do? You want to do something? You want to have a party? You want to go somewhere? I said, birthday's not my, it's not a big deal for me. You know, it's my birthday. It's kind of weird turning 60, I'll tell you that. For all of you sitting out there who are probably in your 40s, 50s, or 60s, I don't know about you, but I still feel like I'm 18 years old. I don't feel like I'm 60. My head is spinning here that I'm turning 60. But anyway, I didn't really want to do anything. I couldn't think of anything I really wanted to do. And we kind of dropped the topic. Well, my birthday is a couple weeks away still. And we have my cousin Chuck has two wonderful young men, two boys. One's a real football superstar. He's off in college, and the other is a high school basketball phenom. They're really good, decent boys. You know, they're really good young men. And my father-in-law Ted, he loves sports, and he loves high school sports especially. He finds it to be very pure, and you know, he likes to watch the athletes and how they do their fundamentals and all that. And he enjoys going to see the boys' games, whether it's basketball or football or whatever. So we were told that they were having a celebration for Colin, who is the younger boy, the basketball kid. And these boys are so good to Ted. They give him football jerseys, they give him basketball jerseys, because he's a big supporter of sports and the kids. And they give him a jersey, and they say, "Hey, listen, they're having this event on Sunday, and Ted's invited." You know, it's very nice. Ted gets invited. That they show him respect. He's a good guy, and he's very caring for them. But I had other things to do. I'm working on a bathroom. I'm cleaning up my yard. You know, I'm trying to get things together here, personal things. And Miss Kathleen says, "Oh, listen, I have to go to the store. I have to do these couple of things. I'll be back in time to go to the party." And I said, "That's good, because then she can take Ted to the party and I can keep working." Well, the party starts at 3, and about 2:30, she calls me and says, "Hey, listen, I'm just leaving the store now. I'm running behind. I'm not going to get there in time. Can you take Ted and bring him over to the party, and I'll meet you there?" Okay, well, I was gonna beg out of the party, you know. It's a nice celebration, but and I was gonna stop in, have a adult beverage, and then cut out and go back to work. All right, so I said, "Okay, come on, Ted, you and I will run over to the party." Well, we get there, we park, and we go into the front door, and as soon as we walk in, I hear a surprise, and I see all these people standing there, and I'm thinking they did a surprise for Ted. That they were doing a surprise for him being such a supporter of the boys, because it didn't even connect in my head until I saw these two gigantic balloons that created the number 60. And I saw, well, there's my wife, Kathleen. There's my son, Joseph, and his wife, Adeline, and my grandchildren. There's my son, Alex, and his wife, Melissa, who's about to have a beautiful little baby for us coming up. I see my son, Jack, and my daughter, Marisa, and her boyfriend Anthony, and they're all, and oh, that's great. Then I turn around and look, and there is Matt Sharon is a guy who I was a police officer with, and he was very important to me in my career. Well, Matt's been retired 16 years, and it started dawning on me when I saw the 60 and I saw all these people, holy moly, this is for me. She did a surprise birthday. That was the surprise. So it really caught me off guard. But it got me thinking. It got me thinking. You know, it was wonderful to spend time. There were so many people there that I really cared about that she had invited. It was a nice afternoon. You know, she had food. She had cocktails for everybody. It was great. But it put into perspective a little bit being 60. Because like I said, I feel like I'm 18. How old do you feel? Do you feel really old? Other than getting up in the morning and making all kinds of noises, getting out of bed. Oh, my back, my leg, my arm, whatever. I don't feel 60. To me, that's a foreign age. That was, when I was a kid, 60 was an old man. If you were 60, you were old, man. But now that I'm here, I don't feel that old. You know, and they're all saying, well, 60 is the new 40. And I guess maybe we're healthier these days. We're in better shape these days. I don't know. But it started to put this in perspective for me. As I look at our country, where we've come, I look at my own life, the things I've done. I look at my children and my grandchildren, which is a way to extend yourself into the future. It just got my head spinning around and thinking, you know, what are we really doing here? What are we all about? We're fighting each other. We're arguing over all these things. And we're losing out on something. I'm trying to put my thumb on. I guess you can hear me searching around for this because I'm trying to understand my place here in this universe. And that's a little bit what I want to talk about. Sitting in church on Sundays, you know, you listen to the sermon, you know, whatever kind of religious facility you go to. Usually our clergy people, they're trying to give us some kind of message. Get us to think about things, look at the bigger picture down the road. And in the last couple of weeks, I've been sitting in church listening to the homilies by the different priests that we're going to. And they're talking about, you know, do more and be more than you think you can. That is really what's wanted from God for all of us. You know, be a better person, be a nicer person, take care of people better. And that's been the message for 2,000 years. So there's no new message here for Lieutenant Joe. What I'm getting is a more of a personal message of, you know, who am I? Where does this all come from? So here's to boil it down, to not dance around and continually go round and round. I'm looking at all of this conversation about the virus, the COVID virus and the vaccines. And we talk about follow the science, as though the science is God, or people who are scientists are gods. And if they say it, And if they're the politically correct scientists, then you absolutely have to listen to what they say as gospel, right? See how I connected the two? And it got me to thinking about the science. What's the purpose of science? Well, the purpose of science is first of all, it's an inexact discipline, isn't it? Right? Does science have all the answers? No, they don't have all the answers. They have lots of answers, and science is a good thing. Science is a very good thing. The medical science world is very, very good. That's why when I'm 60, I feel like I'm 18, because we're in better shape than people were in generations gone by. We have better health. Okay, well, I get all that. But the purpose of science is to answer questions that we, the human race, have about all kinds of things. So we look at space science, and I know for those who've been listening for a while, I go back to this a lot, because I'm telling you, space and the universe is a key understanding to who we are, what we're doing here, our place in the universe, and God. Understanding all of that comes back to outer space, and here's how. And I don't mean, you know, Martians and that kind of thing. I'm not talking about that. What I'm saying is that when you think of the size of the universe, okay, it is ever expanding. It seems to be endless. It seems to be endless out there, and we're very focused on this tiny little speck, this little rock floating around in the middle of nowhere here. And it's like it's the be all and end all. When we see this universe so big around us, we can't even contemplate how big this universe is. And I say to myself, okay, science has tried to answer this question forever. You know, who are we? How did we get here? Where did this? So the most basic question of all is, where did all the space, the empty space that the universe is in, come from? And what is it? Well, you can take the greatest scientists in the world and they cannot tell you. It's always been here. That is such an intellectually weak answer. See, and that's my point. Science is to answer human questions, right? Try and figure things out. It doesn't mean it's to be all and end all, because they don't have all the answers either. So when I listen to a scientist say, well, you know, the whole theory of God, it doesn't make sense in the universe. There's no proof for God. You know, so therefore, it was probably a nice myth for people who were afraid back in the day. They heard thunder. It had to be the gods in the clouds. It was a way to comfort themselves of what was going on around them. And I say, well, that's a guess, isn't it? That's a guess. They don't have any proof of that. They don't have any proof that God doesn't exist. And I look and I see this gigantic universe filled with all of these galaxies, these stars, these gigantic clouds of dust and material. And I say, where did all of that come from? And this is my point, is that the size of the universe is so immense, we really don't understand it. But it takes up space. It came from somewhere. It's always been here. What does that mean, it's always been here? Where's that timeline? See what I'm saying? When you ask this question and you go back, and the further you go back, and when science can't tell you where it came from other than, it's always been here. Where did all the rocks come from? Where did the dust come from that makes up the universe? Where did that come? It's always been here. No, things just aren't always here. Things come from some other thing. Right, we think the Big Bang started it all, right? This big condensed, this hugely condensed ball of everything, and then it exploded, and that's what we're seeing is the material of the universe. Well, where did the space come from that ball of stuff was in, and where did the stuff of the Big Bang come from? It didn't just happen. It did not just materialize and happen. It came from somewhere, and that is the crux question. That is where science cannot just say, well, it's always been, and it's not God, but it's something else. They can't honestly say that because they can't answer that question. They don't know, just like I can't answer that question. But I can ask the question, and I can seek the answers. And one of the possibilities has got to be a supreme being, a God, who put us all here, right? It's got to be. We're so concerned with this little rock we're floating around in, we forget to look up. Look up and look around and see the majesty of the universe, of the way it's built and the way it's connected together, is unlike anything else that we've seen. And science cannot give us an answer of where that stuff came from. They conjecture, and they cut out one possibility. It's not God. I'll tell you that. It's not God. It's the material just was always here. Well, that's not a good answer. So therefore, I think the answer that we're all seeking, those of us who are trying to understand our place in the universe, our relationship with the universe, with God, whether you believe in God or not, you know, if you want to know where you come from, what are we doing here? How are we conducting ourselves as living creatures on this big ball, this big rock floating through space? When we see the enormity of the universe and we don't have answers as to where any of this came from, where we came from. So how are you spending your time? You know, what are you doing with the little bit of time you have? If you're very lucky, you get 100 years, right? To see people, to love, to see the stars, to worship your God, to be grateful for your friends and family. All of these things are limited supply, and I think if we would wake up to that, try and answer this question, and look into our own lives, we might treat each other better. And that's my thought on that for the moment, but science is there to work for us. Science is not the be-all, because they say there is no God, but they have no proof that there isn't, or that there is. Doesn't mean it's right, right? Open your eyes and look up to the stars, and what do you see? Well, we'll be back in a minute with more Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
In today's world, there's no escaping the headlines filled with warnings about emerging viruses and dangerous superbugs. Genesis is the only technology that safely and effectively obliterates harmful pathogens both in the air and on surfaces. Genesis plus HOCL neutralize these threats to your environment in just seconds. Find out more about this amazing technology at genesisfolger.com/outloud for a 15% discount. With Genesis, you'll be prepared for what's next.
Let's get real. Let's get loud. On America Out Loud Talk Radio, this is McCullough Report. Are you tired of your tired vitamins? Consider Healthy Cell. These are pill-free vitamins that are in convenient gel packs. I like the Focus and Recall supplement. I use this a lot. You know, your brain uses a lot of energy, and it depends on a variety of micronutrients and vitamins. Boost your short-term focus and long-term brain power with Healthy Cell's Focus and Recall vitamins. So go to HealthyCell.com, use the code OUTLOUD, all capital letters, OUTLOUD, for 20% off your first order of any Healthy Cell product. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
In 2008, the amount of concentrated time people could spend on a task without becoming distracted was 12 seconds. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds, 1 second less than a goldfish. If you find yourself always distracted or having trouble recalling information, you're likely to fall behind in the demanding, fast-paced 21st century. In other words, brain performance is more critical now than ever. Boost your brain power with Healthy Cell's Focus Plus Recall. Science-backed nootropics to sharpen focus, concentrate longer, enhance recall, improve mental speed, learn rapidly, and be more alert. It's a pill-free brain supplement made with maximum absorption technology, designed to feed our brains at the cellular level. Take it for a test drive. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Focus Plus Recall. That's HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Invincible American spirit drives the most audacious experiment in the history of self-government. America Out Loud celebrates the American spirit every minute of every day. AmericaOutloud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
Alrighty, Rube. Welcome back to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangauer, here for another go-round. Well, I said before that I feel like I'm 18, and I do. I do. I feel mentally like I'm 18. I feel physically like I'm probably 19, okay? I have a bad knee, you know, from sports back in the day, and that aches a little bit once in a while. But other than that, I feel pretty good. I'm sitting here right now, and you hear that sound? I just got my new box of Healthy Cell Super Immune Boost. I'm looking forward to it. I would take this one here on the air with you, but you know, you don't want to hear me gurgling because I drink it right out of the package. It's very, very tasty. It's like a black cherry. Really good. Healthy Cell Super Immune Boost. Immune Super Boost. I was happy to get the new box because I'm telling you, I think it really has helped me maintain my health throughout the whole fall and winter season. I am a proponent of it. I really am. So if you're looking to get yourself healthy, take a look at Healthy Cell Super Immune Boost. They also make something for sleeping if you have problems sleeping. Lieutenant Joe has no problem sleeping. I go to bed, I sleep like a baby. But I know people do have problems, and I've gotten some of that to try it because I know Miss Kathy had a little trouble sleeping for a while there. About a year ago, and I got it. She tried it. I gave it. A cousin of mine was having a real bad time, and he says, "Hey, man, it really helped him." So I'm just telling you, they're on the network. You can hear their advertisements all over the place. But I like it, so I just got my new box, and I'm gonna take my next round of Healthy Cell Super Immune Boost. Good stuff. Helps you feel like you're 18, I guess, is what I'm trying to tell you. So let's look at what's going on in Ukraine. Are we in for a bigger conflict? Is there something shattering coming our way? We're hearing Vladimir Putin make all kinds of threats that, you know, NATO and the Western countries had better not get involved in his destruction of Ukraine. He'll use tactical nuclear weapons. And here's a guy threatening to actually use nuclear weapons. I mean, we have them, but we don't even talk about them because, you know, other than being a deterrent, he's talking about using a tactical nuclear weapon, a small version on the battlefield to wipe things out. Have you seen what his forces are doing to Ukraine and the people of Ukraine? They are slaughtering innocents. What we are watching is historical in a negative sense. There, when you blow up a maternity hospital, when you know that there's people there, when you blow up a theater where they've painted on the ground, children are in here, and you attack that with missiles and rockets, how does this person ever come back into the world of decent people? Russia, under Putin, not the Russian people, you know, like it always is, it's always a madman leader that does things like this. Not necessarily the Russian people. I think they're against this. They don't want any part of this. They're horrified by what they're allowed to know because the Iron Curtain is being shut down around them, as you know. If you've been following this, newspapers, news outlets have been shut down. It's against the law to speak against Putin or his policy in Ukraine. They will put you in the gulag. They've shut down internet access out of the country. It is the Iron Curtain coming down again, and it kind of jumped up and caught people off guard. We kind of knew he wasn't a good guy, but he pretended that he was just a dictatorish kind of a leader, and he wasn't that guy. Well, he's now revealing himself as he is that guy. He's threatening now to cut diplomatic ties with the United States. He's really going off on his own. He's partnering up with China, maybe North Korea. So we're seeing a return of the Axis powers, only a different conglomeration of these maniacal, evil leaders. And I don't like using that word evil. They're bad people, and what they do is evil. So I'm trying to define that, define my head around, are they just evil people in and of themselves as an entity? Are they evil? Or are they just power-hungry, maniacal, dictatorial type of people? And this is to be that kind of way. These are the things that you have to do. But we're seeing this wholesale destruction of Ukraine. I think they said 10 million people have been displaced from their homes and are fleeing. The surrounding countries, Poland, has taken in 2 million people. From what I hear there, people are just opening their homes and letting families come in and stay with them. This is a movement, a migration in Europe because of war we haven't seen since World War II. He's threatening the use of nuclear weapons. We have President Biden, who is, as we've said many times, he's very, very weak. He can't really handle this. And there's not a lot he can do at this point, in all honesty. I mean, you can look at the fact that mentally he's challenged because he's an older man and he's fading. But at the same time, what is he supposed to do when you're caught off guard like that? We don't send troops. Like, I don't think we send troops to Ukraine to go over there and fight and die and have a nuclear bomb detonated over their heads in Kyiv. Or Kiev, or whatever they're calling it now, and have our American soldiers dying there. I don't know that that's the right thing. How do you stop this person? How do you stop this flow? What if he decides to go after Poland? Even if he just wants to throw some rockets over the border to attack any military that's set up over there, right? What do we do then? Now he's attacked a NATO country. Do you see how easily this can transform into World War III? And then what is our response, right? Is he crazy enough to really launch a nuclear weapon? Because that would require that the Western countries that are attacked, that have access to nuclear weapons, maybe even the United States might have to do it, launch a nuclear attack. And then what happens then? Then all bets are off. Then, you know, hell rains down on Earth in minutes. You think of all the population centers that are targeted by the Russian military, probably, and the Chinese military. We know they're targeting American cities, just like the Americans are targeting cities in their countries. But it seems that a person who's willingly out there to say that they will use these weapons is either crazy or trying to intimidate the rest of the world so bad that nobody will make a move. I'm inclined to think that that's probably what it is. By him outwardly saying, hey, you do anything and I'll light off a nuke. If we do something, he lights off a nuke, then what do we do? Then it's all over, right? We're living that real nightmare right now. But how do you stop this person? Well, I think from what we're seeing, Is the Russian military as big and bad as we thought it was? What is he holding back that he can't beat Ukraine? He can't seem to go in there, and he's stalling. His army is stalling. He's lost 5,000 to 7,000 troops. I watched a video the other day of a lone Russian tank patrolling, I think it was Mariupol, and it was hit by anti-tank weapons from three different sides. Wiped out the tank, killed the crew. Why was it by itself? Why wasn't there a brigade of tanks traveling together? The military planning here seems very, very poor. The equipment that they're using doesn't seem... We thought they were the Russian military, right? Like the Soviet Union. They were this big, gigantic, powerful thing, and they don't seem to be. So that seems to be causing some questions from people. I've been talking to people about this, and I'm saying it looks like they don't have the ability or the equipment to really roll in there and take the much smaller Ukraine that has much less military equipment, much less stuff. Matter of fact, it's almost a square off right now. It's like a tie going on. They're not beating them handily, as you would think, you would have assumed would have happened very, very quickly. Maybe not in 2 days, but you would have figured by now, just air power alone, you could wipe out the Ukraine military and then roll into the country. But they can't seem to do that. So what I'm hearing from some people as we talk about it is that he's holding back. He's holding back for some reason. We don't actually know the reason. We can't really contemplate the reason, but he's holding back for some reason to trick everyone into thinking, I don't know, that he's weak, and then he's just going to wipe them out all at one time. I don't know. It could be that, right? When we look at a problem, we have to look at all possibilities, right? You can't discount things. I'm not a science guy. I don't just discount things because I don't know what they are. See how I'm connecting to the last conversation? Pretty funny, huh? I don't know why this happened. What's an Occam's razor? Usually the simplest reason is the truth. Could it just be that he's not this military genius, that his generals are not military geniuses, that his army is not this big, gigantic, all-powerful thing that we thought it was? Maybe it is that he's just not that competent as a military leader. He's a very good spy. He's a very good torturer. He's a very good dictator, I suppose. But he's not a very good military kind of guy. That's one possibility. Number two, he is holding back. He doesn't want to just go in and wipe them out. Maybe he thinks that would really turn the world really against him. So he's trying to do it piecemeal, slow and steady. Kind of like a drip, drip, drip as we see. What's happening now? We watch Ukraine every day. Oh, he blew up a baby hospital, right? A maternity hospital. Oh, that's terrible. He blew up a theater where they marked outside children inside, and he blew that. Oh, that's horrible. If he did it all in one day, if he did it as one big air power attack and really devastated that country, killed 1 million people at one time, I think, yeah, the rest of the world would probably be pushed to a further action. By doing it slow and steady the way he is, little bit every day, little bit here and there, keep attacking the civilians, trying to break the will of the population as they hunt for, Zelensky, if they could find him and capture him and hang him in the square, that would really break the will of the people. Is that what he's doing? Is that slow drip, is that we're all kind of desensitized to it? Oh, what did he blow up today? Oh, an old folks home. Oh, that's horrible. What a terrible man. He blew up an old folks home. And then we go about our business. This is when I say historic, I mean that in the negative way of what we're watching here. We are watching the brutalization of an innocent people right before our eyes by a dictator from the past. We thought these kind of people were gone, didn't we? Didn't we think that the Hitler type of person, the Mussolini type of person, the Stalin type of leader was kind of gone? You know, you got President Xi in China, but, you know, he's not rolling over people. In his own country he is, but we don't really know what's going on there. We don't see it. We don't have an open news thing there. So, but we thought these kind of people were kind of gone. You know, we were kind of past that. And then here comes Putin revealing who he really is. Like, kind of like back in Scooby-Doo, right? And they pull the mask off. Who is this guy really underneath? And he really is a brutal dictator type in the same mold as a Stalin. from his own home country there. And what does that mean? Well, recently his foreign minister, what's the guy's name? Sergey Lavrov. He comes out and he makes a comment that any NATO countries that do anything to aid Ukraine, will be treated as the active combatants now. So they'll come after you. So I know there's been a lot of movement secretly, they're saying now. I guess it's not a secret once it comes out, but it was secret, that a lot of NATO nations are moving troops and materiel into these NATO countries surrounding Ukraine, I guess to reinforce it in case something happens, that they would be ready to be prepared. That would be a smart thing to do. I would be preparing big time right now if I was one of those countries. But he comes out and Lavrov says, hey, any move by NATO to assist Ukraine in any way can and will be met by unbelievable response, including maybe even a nuclear weapon dropped on you, right? So we're almost at that point of that face-off. Is there a way out for Putin? Is there a way out for him to save face and end this conflict? Or is he just going to keep on going city by city, slow and steady, winning slowly, not winning big, but winning slowly, wiping people out, killing innocent people, driving them out of the country? It's something for us to really take a closer look at, and I don't know that we're looking at it close enough. I have said I don't want my son, my 18-year-old son, having to go fight there because there's no direct American interest in the short term in Ukraine. There's not. It's horrible to watch. It is terrible to see those innocent people being slaughtered by this dictator. But it doesn't have a direct effect on the United States. It is no interest of the United States other than a moral interest being destroyed. And to go to war, total war, over a moral interest is probably an immoral thing to not do. You know what I mean? It's probably wrong to not go do it. But the fact is that the response, the result of that would be so devastating that I don't know any other way to say it than we have to just watch this happen and hope it comes to an end. Hope the people of Ukraine can bring it to an end without them being completely devastated, because if we get involved, we are going to suffer. We would win. Ultimately, the United States would lead and Europe, the Western countries would wipe out Russia. But that could certainly come at the cost of millions of lives. Europe being soaked in blood yet again. In a new century, and maybe attacks on the United States mainland. You know, they got submarines floating around. They got the ability to light off nukes and hit us now. You know, so as I'm pondering all of this, and I guess you can hear me wandering around here with this. I'm trying to figure this out. Morally, we should go in and knock him out, and take the chance. That's the moral thing to do, to protect innocence. But that could lead to such devastation that we are really powerless at the moment to do that. We have to simply watch this horror. Now, can we supply Ukraine with the weapons that they need to fight back? I think we can, and we're doing it. I see that President Biden has authorized $800 million to help them. That's good. That's a good thing, a good move in the right direction. Can they hold us accountable? What happens when those missiles that they hit blow up some Russian thing or are launched over the border at Russia and it's got the United States written on it? Can he use that as a pretext? Of course, can use anything as a pretext. Will he use gas, chemical weapons, to kill the people of Ukraine? We stand by and watch that. What is it we're actually going to do here? It's a lot for us to think about because it's not coming to an end quickly. It's been going on for a while now, and it's going to shape the future. Because like I said, even if the conflict comes to an end, one way or another, he wipes out Ukraine, takes it over, or they hold him back enough where he finds a way to save face and he just takes part of it, or whatever, however it comes out. Is Russia part of the family of nations now? I would say no, not while Putin is involved. I would say they do not get to be a part of the nation of families. They are a pariah now. Are they going to join with the Chinese? Is this a bigger move for dictatorship to take over freedom? Is that what we're seeing develop in front of us? Right? Here in America, we worry about everything immediate. Everything's immediate, fast, now. We want to do it today. Other countries in the world take their time. They have long-term plans because, you know, they ain't going anywhere. Putin ain't getting out of office anytime soon. President Xi is not leaving office. He's going to be there for the rest of his life. It's not here in the United States where we go back and forth and back and forth and, you know, we go to the right, we go to the left, we go to the right, we go to the left. There's no long-term strategy for us here in America like there is in some of these other countries. They go, hey, this guy's in charge until he dies, and he might not die for 40 years. So whichever way he's going to steer the ship, that's the way we're going for the next 40 years. Let's go back in the podcast world, and let's look up Chasing Justice a while ago, where, because I've done a couple of shows on corruption. And I talked about corruption and how corruption, of all things, is really the negative driving force. And that's what we have here. This is a corruption. Our media is corrupt. Our politicians are corrupt. And in Ukraine, looks like it was the same thing. Until this happened, weren't we saying they were one of the most corrupt governments on the planet? Look at all the money they funneled to the Biden family, right? This Hunter Biden is such a genius. He gets $80,000 a month. What, you know? And everybody pretends, well, we can't even look at that. He had a job, and that's what they wanted to pay him. The guy has no ability to do any of the things that he was hired to do. He was a self-admitted drug addict. We see all the videos of this guy. Obviously, this was a corruption. This was a way to get influence over Joe Biden. But we won't look at that. Right, so we were saying they were a very corrupt country before all this, and now, because they're being attacked, they're being made to look like heroes. Why is that? Why is that happening? We don't know. We're going to find out soon enough. Now, it's interesting here as I go through my notes. What is it about USA versus Russia that would really take us to the next level? I hear stirrings here. There's people moving around, and it's really what makes me think of all of these things together. This whole episode is really about looking inward, myself, my family, the country, and what it is that's going on. Because we're in for something. We're heading for something. I hope it diffuses itself. I don't know that it will. And that's really what I'm trying to talk about. Let's look at another outside problem that we have, the growing crime rate in America, right? We have this, supposedly this great president, great vice president, and, you know, we have all these liberal politicians in charge of everything, and look at the danger to people. You know, New York City is out of control. Eric Adams was going to come in and he was going to really be strong. Well, I could tell you, you might not have liked him. But if Curtis Sliwa had been the mayor, he would have gone after crime in a big way. You know how the guy is. You know what he was talking about. And you've seen him do things. Eric Adams is trying. I think he is trying. I just don't know if he can do it without being politically correct. See, that's what's holding him back. He's trying to be politically correct. He's trying to fight crime without actually fighting the crime. So, you know, he's got a new couple of new units out there. But they're marked, so you can see who they are. They're the police. Well, that's just, you know, he wants people to back up when they're trying to videotape the police, when they're attacking police officers doing arresting. Back up. Give them room to do their job. It's all of this is window dressing. You know, if you want to fight crime, you have to go in and find the criminals. We know that in any area, there's usually a core group of criminals that do most of the crime. And this was the way of attacking that was what Giuliani did in Bratton back in the day, was the broken windows theory. You go in and you get people who are doing the small things, jumping turnstiles, doing shopliftings, doing, you know, stealing from people, and you hold them to account. And those are usually the same people that will come back and bash you over the skull with a brick, kill you, rape you, take your property, take your daughter, whatever. You get them under control. And you have a crime, not crime free, but pretty much crime free. New York was the safest big city in the country for the longest time. Now it's one of the most dangerous places in the country right now. And he can't get a handle on it because he's trying to fight crime in a politically correct way instead of going after the trouble, which, again, comes down to the reality of there's a corruption there. We can't actually say what the crime is. We can't identify it. We can't talk about it. We have to just say it's nebulous, this crime. There's crime out here, as opposed to going where the crime is. You know, Kathleen and I were talking the other day about the residents of the different communities that are plagued with having to live in crime-ridden neighborhoods. These are American citizens. These are our brothers and sisters. And their children are suffering through all of this this politically correct nonsense instead of going in and making those neighborhoods safe by taking the criminals out, arrest them, get them out. You know, bail reform. I have said many times on this program, I think there should be bail reform, you know, for nonviolent crime, obviously. Anything violent, and the bail should be very high because that keeps that core group of criminals off the street and that protects everyone. You know, we can argue about the police. The police are the problem. The police are not the problem. The individual cops who are bad, we got to get rid of them. Right? And you know, every cop in the world will tell you that. If there's a bad cop, get rid of them. But the reality here is that the only thing that keeps a community safe is proactive police work. That means the cops go out there, they go undercover, they infiltrate criminal activities, gangs. They go into a neighborhood and they see crime and they take action on it. Stop and frisk is a thing that's, oh, that's horrible because you're just putting all people under police. I understand that. There are laws that we have to follow, constitutional laws. You can't just go up and frisk somebody for no reason. You have to have an articulable, reasonable reason to do so. Well, in a crime-ridden neighborhood, the cops know who the criminals are. The cops recognize people who are doing pre-attack types of things, which is how they behave, how they dress. You know, who did we have on here not too long ago? We had Dr. Robert Rail talking about how police can learn to identify somebody that's carrying a weapon by the way they hold their body, by the way they walk, the clothes they wear. Cops can figure this out. That's all proactive police work, and that's what keeps us safe. Well, we're not doing that. Again, we're trying to fight crime in a politically correct way. We're trying to hold off Russia in a politically correct way. We're trying to cover the media in a politically correct way, and it is causing us a lot of suffering. So there's a lot for us to think about here. I tried to cover the ground pretty well today. Now I'm going to ask you to think about it. Think about this. Think about your family and where do you want this to go? And we have to raise our voices and let people know elections have consequences and they're coming up, and think which way is going to be the best way for us to go. So until we meet again, my friends, this is Lieutenant Joe for Chasing Justice. Be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. We'll see you down the road.